Bully Lewis, siehe Dion George, siehe Honorable Mavila, Sir Vessels and myself.
Yes,
okay. We will have to start with the meeting. Honorable members, the meeting is officially open. You are all welcome to this meeting. And let's move to roll call and Alan and
I didn't receive any apologies for today, sir.
Okay. I received an apology from Honorable Abraham. She must join us around 10 o'clock. There is a protest at the town, so she's attending to those who are protesting. I would also like to apologize that somewhere around 10 o'clock I will disconnect. There is a matter of traditional leadership here where there is a dispute. I'm from the royal family of the Maswanga in Guyana. So you know contestation for traditional leaders. So there is an information that I have to provide to officials from the Premier's office in Limpopo. So I will disconnect and come back, and then I will request somebody to chair while I will have disconnected, but I will come back. Then let's move right away to item 3, where we'll be getting a briefing from the Parliamentary Budget Office on the pre-medium-term budget policy statement. PBO will start.
Morning, Chair. Morning, Honourable Members. I will start for the PBO. I'm just going to share screen quickly.
Okay, Siraj. You are welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There we go. I was looking for the share screen button. It's saying host. As host disabled participant screen sharing. Does the Secretary of the Committee want to share the presentation? Because I can't do it from my side.
Tebogo, are you able to make Siraj a co-host, please?
Okay, I see that I can now. Again, good morning, Honourable Members. Thank you very much for this opportunity. I'm going to skip the first slide on the PBO's mandate, move on to the outline. We will start with the background slide, introduction, section on global and domestic macro situation, the policy framework and plans, revenue taxation and taxation issues, expenditure, provincial and local government updates, and conclusion. Different members of the PBO staff will come in different sections, and the person who's presenting will just point to the next person. We'll be able to do that right now to save time. On the background, I also think it's this graph is I'm going to skip because I think most people are aware of what the MTBS is. Unless the chair feels that I should go through it, I'm going to move on to the introduction.
You can move to the next slide.
Thank you, Chair. Okay, the 2020 MTBPS is presented at the time of crisis for society and the economy. The global pandemic continues, vaccines are still being tested, and countries in the Northern Hemisphere are experiencing a second wave. In the US, they're actually talking about the third wave of rising infections and new lockdowns. COVID-19 has negatively affected an interlinked global economy in a way that constrains most countries' economic recovery. It has shown socioeconomic fault lines in society and changed the way in which government and markets are perceived. Even with government efforts to address the impact of COVID-19, hunger and hardship have increased while economic activity is much reduced in South Africa. And we will have some slides quite soon to show, some graphs to show that quite soon. Government has developed plans for recovery, but we are still uncertain about health and social support still required and that the pandemic is ongoing, and that South Africa may face the possibility of a second wave, as recently pointed out by Dr. Karim. Indications are that the 2021 MTF budget will implement fiscal consolidation to reduce public, the non-interest expenditure baselines for 2021 and 2022-23 have been revised downward, and there will be no nominal baseline increase in 2023-24. Moving on to the global and domestic macro situation. With regard to public finance, we see in the global situation, the pandemic has wreaked havoc globally on the fight against poverty and efforts to achieve the UN Sustainable Development Goals. A recent UN report shows that the pandemic could erase progress on human development made over the past 6 years. A July 2020 UN report on the Sustainable Development Goals warned that 71 million people were forced into poverty during 2020 alone. Governments around the world have considerably increased expenditure to reduce the socioeconomic impacts of the pandemic. The approach favored was to do whatever it takes to reduce the spread of infections and to support welfare. COVID-19 globally is having a devastating impact on public finances. See, government revenues have declined and expenditure increased. At the same time, deficits and debts have increased tremendously, and there have been widespread downgrades of sovereign credit ratings. I should add also credit ratings of private sector companies. At the same time, there's widespread anxiety globally that moving towards fiscal consolidation too early and too quickly will lead to slower recoveries and immense hardship. Okay, carry on with this global situation and public finance. Prominent economists, including those with the IMF, the World Bank, and the United Nations, encourage countries to borrow even more now to address the current crisis. They call for debt relief and debt forgiveness for developing countries, particularly low-income countries. The use of expansionary fiscal policy around the globe is likely to grow and continue into the future as countries face intensified disasters and risks linked to climate change. Governments globally are examining measures to increase revenue and debt while reducing risks associated with increased debt. Many countries have borrowed from the IMF and used the special drawing rights. And just to add here that there has been a complaint that the debt relief provided by the IMF has been relatively minuscule. There have been lots of calls from around the world for the IMF to do much more and to say that using its balance sheet, it could do much more. We've also seen special drawing rights not being used enough and that certain countries actually not helping the use of drawing rights. Many governments of developed and developed countries have implemented quantitative easing with central banks to increase the holding of government debt. This what was seen as something that was frowned upon until very recently is actually the attitudes towards quantitative easing have changed, even for emerging economies, to the point where recently there was a editorial in the Financial Times saying that even emerging economies or developing countries can use quantitative easing. And we recently saw a report where the Philippines was changing their law to allow their central bank to lend more to government or to buy more government debt. And Standard & Poor's actually said that it wasn't a negative impact on ability to repay, and they wouldn't necessarily reduce credit ratings based on quantitative easing. So the general effect for both developed and developing countries that have used quantitative easing has been reduced borrowing costs and lower refinancing needs. Thank you, Chair. I'm going to stop here, and my colleague Patsani Banda will continue. Thank you very much.
Good morning, colleagues. I'll be presenting the macroeconomic situation as well as trends in, let me just put my video on, sorry about that. I'll be presenting the global economic outlook as well as trends in household consumption, as well as trends in labor and employment, which are important to understand, particularly in the domestic environment, decreasing as well as unemployment increasing due to the pandemic. So the global economic outlook is expected to, well, the world economy in particular, is expected to contract by about 4.4% this year, and this is primarily due to the pandemic. This includes overall product and trade in goods and services, which is expected to rebound in 2021, but this is heavily dependent on the ability of governments to manage the virus and its effects on their individual economies. There still exists considerable risks and uncertainties to the general global outlook from the coronavirus pandemic, including, which we've already seen in Europe, the potential for second waves and further waves of the virus in South Africa, which would further affect economic activity and us reaching a point where the economy starts picking up and we experience economic growth. Next slide. The next slide focuses on the outlook for the South African economy. So the medium-term growth outlook for the South African economy, which is already in recession since the third quarter of 2019, has worsened considerably since the tabling of the budget in February. And this you can see in the first and in the third graph. The economy is expected to contract by over 8% this year, reducing the economy to its size, to its 2013 size. South Africa is expected to grow more slowly than most peer countries, which is seen in graph 2, which are also affected by the coronavirus. So we're highlighted in red, and we're expected to considerably affected by the slowing down of the economy due to the effects of the pandemic. The next slide, which is the latest trends in household consumption, focuses on the quarter-on-quarter change in both disposable income of households, which is the money available for households to use for consumption, and the quarterly percentage change in household consumption released by Statista. So as you can see from the graphs, there has been a considerable decline between the first quarter and the second quarter in both disposable income and as well as household consumption for households. In particular, real disposable income of households contracted by 49.7% in the second quarter of 2020, after an increase of 2.1% in the first quarter of 2020. Household consumption itself dropped by 49.8% in the second quarter after a marginal increase of 0.2% in the first quarter. Spending on durable goods and semi-durable goods declined the most because these were classified as non-essential during the lockdown. Overall, consumer spending by households contracted by 7.5% from the first half of 2019 to the first half of 2020. This decline in general was consistent with the decline in both consumer confidence and credit extension to households. So we're seeing that households are under severe pressure to severely constrained by the lockdown itself and the pressures that has put on the ability to consume. The next slide focuses on household debt and the latest quarter-on-quarter change. So the ratio of household debt to disposable income increased significantly from 73.6% in the first quarter of 2020 to 85.3% in the second quarter. The quarter-to-quarter decline in nominal disposable income exceeded the decline in household debt. The outstanding balances of most categories of credit extended to households decreased during the lockdown. The decline in credit extension was probably due to socioeconomic uncertainty about household saving and spending patterns. So what we've seen overall is that households' disposable income has declined significantly, household consumption has declined significantly, and household debt to disposable income over the second quarter has increased significantly as well. The next slide focuses on labor market trends and unemployment in the country. 2.2 million people lost their jobs in the second quarter of 2020, as reported by StatsSA. The number of people in the labor force declined by 5 million, that's 21.4% decline. The number of people who were not economically active for reasons other than discouragement increased by 5.6 million between the two quarters. So the non-economically active population had in general had a net increase of 5.2 million. The official rate of unemployment declined from 30.1% to 23.3%. So this is in contrast to the fact that the non-economically active population has had a net increase of 5.2 million, and this has affected the number of people that are included in the labor force and the number of people that are considered unemployed. In general, the labor force participation rate was lower in the second quarter of 2020 compared to the first quarter, decreasing by 13% to 47.3%. So whilst we have seen a decline in the unemployment rate, we're very concerned, obviously, about the economically active population, which has increased by 5.2 million. And that shows that people have decided in general not even to be discouraged by labor market, to enter the labor market, but to participate in some formal way between March and June. And the next slide continues on this discussion through the NITSCRAM survey on the impact of social grants and changes in employment. So the NITSCRAM Wave 2 report deep dives into some of the micro details of what's been going on during the COVID-19 pandemic and how it's been affected by changes in social grants due to the government trying to respond to the decrease in employment and alleviate some of the pressure on households, as well as changes to employment due to the different levels of the lockdown and how they have affected economic activity. So what the report finds is that additional government spending on grants was relatively well targeted to low-income households. Spending on child support grants was particularly pro-poor. However, only 40% of the 11.33 million individual grant applicants were successful at the time of the survey. So whilst there were quite a number of individuals that did apply for grants, only 40% had actually received a COVID-19 support grant. The NITSCRAM Wave 1 survey, which had come before Wave 2, survey found that 3 million jobs were lost between February and April 2020. Wave 2 shows that these jobs had not returned by June, even with the easing of the lockdown, and there are concerns that these losses may be long-lasting. So there's an expectation that there will be a long lag between the government opening up the economy and people actually getting back their jobs, because what we've seen is that whilst the economy has been opened, individuals haven't received or haven't been able to go back to work at the rate at which we would have expected with the opening up of the economy. Excluding changes in temporary non-employment, the percentage decline in employment between February and June was 10 times higher for the poorest 50% of workers compared to the richest 25% of workers. So this just shows the vulnerability of unskilled and semi-skilled workers compared to relatively skilled workers who have not been affected as much by changes in the current working environment and the lockdown itself. And I think that is my last slide. And then I will allow my colleague, Mr. Rashad Amra, to continue from this point. Thank you.
Thank you. No, thank you, Fatani. Honourable members, as you know, South Africa, like other countries, has to borrow to make up the shortfall between revenue and expenditure. As such, the cost of government borrowing, that is the interest rate at which government pays for its debt, actually matters quite a bit. A higher interest rate consumes a larger share of government revenue and expenditure, and it may contribute to debt sustainability challenges in the future if interest rates continue to increase and lenders aren't willing to lend us or demand much higher interest rates. The supplementary budget presented in June presented a substantial increase to South Africa's borrowing requirement for the current fiscal year and as well as over the medium term. South Africa's borrowing cost, honourable members, has been on an upward trajectory over the last 18 months. And what this indicates, at the very least, is the perception of higher risk from domestic and foreign investors. So if we look at the two graphs on your slide right now, the left-hand side, we've got South Africa's yield curve. What a yield curve shows is essentially it's a borrowing cost, but it is actually the perception of risk. So over the medium term, we've seen less demand for South Africa's debt, resulting in a higher yield over the medium term, and it indicates a perception of higher risk, especially over the medium term. On average, about 2% more we're paying compared to 18 months ago. Corresponding to that yield curve on the left-hand side, we have the green line on the right-hand graph. And what this is showing us is South Africa's bond performance at recent auctions. And you can see there's a general upward trajectory, meaning that our borrowing costs have actually been increasing. And it's not just a matter of risk perception. It's actually affecting our bottom line in terms of payments. Similarly, if you look at the orange dots on that graph, they're declining, right? Over a short trend, there's a decline, which indicates declining appetite for South Africa's debt right now. Next slide, please. Whilst the increase in South Africa's borrowing costs is certainly not a favorable development for our public finances, it's important to contextualize these developments in the global picture, at least. So as noted in the introduction, most countries have experienced large budget deficits in the current year, larger debt levels, and higher, and many, especially emerging market and developing economies, have experienced higher borrowing costs. And this is to a large extent because of the pandemic and its economic consequences. So what you have on this graph in front of you, on the top left, specifically the red bar, that's showing you South Africa is likely to have the second largest budget deficit amongst peer economies, second only to Brazil. So when you contextualize our fiscal challenges and the current context, we see that even compared to our peer economies, we're a bit of an outlier in terms of our indebtedness and in terms of our budget deficit and also our borrowing cost. The graph in the top right-hand corner, that's the multicolored snakes, you can see South Africa is the red line, and it's comparing our borrowing costs, so that's the yield on the 10-year government bond, to fellow emerging market economies, and you can see that we're pretty expensive compared to our peers, second only to Turkey and tied second place with Pakistan. So if you look at the other emerging market economies over there, they all face lower borrowing costs than us right now. And the bottom left-hand corner, what we're comparing over there is the outlook for the 2020 debt levels for South Africa compared with our fellow emerging market economies. And again, we can see that we're on the higher end of the distribution for the current year. So these indicators, contextualizing our fiscal situation, combined with the findings of the previous slide showing higher borrowing costs, suggests more pronounced fiscal pressures for South Africa relative to peer economies. And what this underscores is the importance in the management of public finances to ensure that there's effective and efficient spending and also a composition of spending that allows for higher growth, higher revenue generation, which will allow for sustainable public finances going forward. Next slide, please. Honourable members, having presented on South Africa's contextual fiscal pressures, I'd like now to move on to PBO's analysis and outlook for the fiscal framework. This is based on data available to date,
In doing so, I'd like to emphasize that the PBO's outlook is intended to be illustrative and is non-policy adjusted. That is to say, it doesn't reflect the effects of policies that may be proposed by government in the MTVPS next week, or measures to increase revenue or reduce expenditure or to boost growth. So consequently, we need to look at this as a for illustrative purposes and not indicative. So we obviously, as PBO, don't have the information that's going to be presented next week, and we choose not to speculate. Right? That's the only prudent way. So this is illustrative and not definitive. With that proviso, what we do is we merely present an outlook based on the available data and illustrating the likely course for public finances in the absence of any policy changes or recalibration. So to recap, honorable members, the special appropriations budget table in June presented a downwardly revised revenue projection for the current fiscal year and obviously over the medium term, and this was in line with the downwardly revised growth projection my colleague Pisani referred to earlier on. So this is illustrated in the graph in front of you on the top right-hand corner with the pivot between the blue line and the red line. So we saw a trajectory from the beginning of the year for revenue and the downward trajectory further to that. So that's the case both with revenue and with expenditure. PBO, based on updated nominal growth estimates, has provided an estimate for revenue for the current year and over the medium. And this is somewhat close to national treasuries, but when you present it over a share of GDP, we're seeing a larger shortfall over the medium term. So we estimate a larger revenue expenditure gap over the medium term. On a year-to-date basis, and that's what we're showing on the top left-hand chart of this graph, of this page, is the revenue performance on a year-to-date basis. And we can see, and this is in line with expectations, the revenue shortfall relative to February projections has been significant. I mean, I would venture and almost say massive. 24.6% overall revenue decline on a year-to-date basis is pretty large, and this indicates the severity of the impact of the COVID crisis, as well as mitigating measures implemented, the lockdowns and the like. So for the current year, PBO projects a main budget balance close to what is presented in the special appropriations budget in rand terms. However, when you present this as the share of GDP, it's lower. Next slide, please. Our members, so given the larger revenue expenditure gap over the medium term, based on data to date, when you present this as a share of GDP, we see a larger budget deficit over the medium term compared to what was presented both in the budget review in Feb as well as in the special appropriations budget in June. And this is the green line right at the bottom of the graph in front of you. The blue line is what was presented in February, the red line what was presented in June, and we see in the absence of any policy adjustment, a larger budget deficit for the current year and over the medium term. Next slide, please. A larger budget deficit over the medium term will increase government's borrowing requirement over the medium term. And this essentially means government needs to issue more debt over the medium term, both for the current year as well as for the second and third year of the MTF, and that contributes to the basic math to a higher debt stock. A higher debt stock and a lower GDP will result in the debt levels increasing as a share of GDP over the medium term, and this is actually higher than what is projected both in the budget review as well as in the special appropriations budget. And so that's the panel on the left-hand side of this particular slide showing the green bar, which is what PBO is presented based on currently available data, higher than what was estimated in the special appropriations budget. What is important to note over here, and this is also mentioned by the Economic Advisory Council, that the likelihood of South Africa realizing a peak in the gross debt to GDP level of 87% in 2023-24 is highly unlikely. And we find, based on currently available data, that gross debt to GDP increasing to 89% of GDP over the third year of the current MTF, faster and higher than the active scenario presented by the Minister of Finance. Again, I'd like to note that these are for illustrative purposes and they're not policy adjustments. When we look at higher borrowing costs and a higher debt stock, we see that borrowing costs consume a larger share of revenue. over the medium term compared to what is presented by the Minister of Finance, and that's the green line on the graph on the right-hand side, more than 22-23% over the medium term. I'd like now to hand over to my colleague, Dr. Alandi, the Acting Director, to take us through the policy considerations. Thank you.
Next slide. Thank you, Rashad, for that introduction. And good morning, honorable members. I will take you through the policy slides, starting with the revised targets. Next slide. So members, although the aim is to achieve the NDP targets for 2030, the macroeconomic and fiscal situation in the country has required from government to review the medium-term targets for 2024. And here are some changes that are reflected in the 2019-2024 medium-term strategic framework. So our target for GDP growth has been revised between 2-3% for the 2024 financial year. Unemployment has been revised downwards to between 20-24%. And when you go downwards and you look at poverty, that target has been revised to 20% in 2024. Although the target over the medium term or until 2030 is 0%. And then members, last two are goals that has been indicated by the President in his State of the Nation address. The President indicated that the violent crime needs to be halved by 2024. And one of the other targets or goals that he has set is that every 10-year-old being must be able to read for meaning. This target still needs to be developed after the first assessment. Next slide. The members table illustrates that our own goals and priorities also contribute to international goals and aspirations. For example, if you look at outcome 12, which is an efficient, effective, and developmental-oriented public service, it aligns directly with Sustainable Development Goal 16, which is for peace, justice, and strong institutions. It is also directly aligned to the Agenda 2063, Aspiration 3, which is an Africa of good governance, democracy, respect for human rights, justice and the rule of law, as well as Aspiration 5, which is Africa with a strong cultural identity, common heritage, values and ethics. So members, the 2019-24 medium-term strategic framework priorities, it's the five-year implementation plan for the National Development Plan. So this table illustrates the alignment of the seven priorities for the 2019-2024 medium-term strategic framework, the outcomes of the NDP. The last column is showing how the objectives of the district model and the infrastructure planning framework supports the medium-term strategic framework. So the objectives of the district model support priority number 1 and 6, and the sub-frames of the National Spatial Development Framework actually supports priority 2, 5, and 7. Members, also just to note, in terms of priority 2 of the medium-term strategic framework, the economic transformation and job creation priority, is supported by, or it will be replaced by, the new Economic Reconstruction and Recovery Plan for South Africa. Next slide. Next slide, please. The members, now that we know the priorities of government, we need to ensure that are implemented. So the strategic and annual performance plans, together with the budget of institutions, are the vehicle for policy implementation. If an outcome or an output is not reflected in a strategic plan or in an APP, it will not be implemented. So our analysis on the progress with implementation of the NDC in the first 5 years showed slow progress, and this was mainly due to low integration of the 2014-2019 medium-term strategic framework into strategic and annual performance plans. The main reason for this was the use of different planning concepts and terminology for the development of these documents. So this year, the National Treasury actually issued a revised framework for the development of these documents. The purpose of this revised framework is to align the concepts and also introduce implementation programs to ensure the integration of the 2019-2024 medium-term strategic framework into the strategic and annual performance plans of government institutions. So what this actually means in practice is that the 81 outcomes that are reflected in the 2019-24 medium-term strategic framework must be presented in the strategic plans, as well as the 561 intervention indicators must be reflected in the institution's annual performance plan. The DPME will do the analysis on all APPs to ensure that these outcomes and indicators are integrated strategic plans and annual performance plans. Next slide. So members, we mentioned the introduction of the implementation programs. So these programs will basically address specific challenges, such as EPWP, for example. It will also act as strategic interventions within an institution or sector, and it will also improve the implementation of existing or new programs in the budget and in the annual performance plan. What is also new in the revised framework, which is very useful for oversight bodies, is that information on public entities, infrastructure projects, and service delivery projects per district, and also conditional grant indicators and targets needs to be reflected in the new APPs in terms of the new revised framework. So members, just to conclude with this is that if we want to exceed, we need to make sure that a government basically implement all these regulations and guidelines and frameworks that will ensure implementation of our policies. Next slide. So again, members, a policy can only be implemented if it is funded. So in an effort to align the budget with the National Development Plan, the National Treasury actually categorized all institutional budgets into functional groups. Tables show that these functional groups are aligned to the 14 outcomes of the National Development Plan, and they are also aligned to the 7 priorities of the new medium-term strategic framework, but there might be a bit of revision in the new budget in terms of the categorization within the budget function groups. So this was my next, my last slide, so I will hand over to Dumisani Danki. Thank you, member.
Thank you, colleagues. Good morning, honorable members. I have some discussion around revenue issues to consider. It's worth noting that government doesn't usually announce tax measures during the MTPS. Next slide, Siraj. In line with the record quarterly contraction GDP over the second calendar year, it's expected revenue collected declined across almost all the revenue streams compared to the previous years. This slide is trying to show that and this is the reflection of the effect of the COVID-19 and some of the government measures implemented to contain the reduce spread of on the economy, on household income, spending, and as well as corporate profitability. And you'll remember, honorable members, that the level 5 risk subsidy of COVID-19 was implemented, the lockdown was implemented a few days just before the beginning of the second quarter there. The next slide, Siraj. this slide that comes in, I think, Rashad has already shown the slides. In this slide, we're showing the revenue collection for the past 5 months of the current financial year between April and August, in comparison to previous years. And this shows what is expected, as has been announced and indicated, that due to economic contractions, loss of jobs, reduction in demand in the economy, we would see that there was contraction in revenue collection compared to previous years. And it's worth noting that actually the revenue targets has been downward revised during the supplemental budget as well, which means we have actually seen quite a huge decline in collection. All major tax instruments, your TIT, CIT, to a varying degree, experienced significant contraction in their performance for the past 5 months compared to the other years. You can see the red bars there in the graph. Next slide, please. Now the key issues, of course, we want to light here. We've seen the cost of revenue collection ratio, which is determined by the expenditure of incurred in collecting the revenue, and actual revenue collected has continued to decline over the years. And we've also seen SARS announced that there's also continued to decline in the last year. And of course, this raises questions around the challenges in revenue collections, how effective are some of the measures that have been implemented in improving efficiency, and also whether has the tax authority performed less effectively as expected. So these are some of the points with that affect the actual collection. We have seen in the supplementary budget review that due to economic downturn related to COVID-19, the government has downward revised the revenue target for the current year to 304 billion, which is of course, taking into account the tax relief measures that are extended to households and businesses, which this revision led to 18% lower than how much was collected in the prior year. COVID-19 economic conditions, together with continued digitalization of business activities, continued business and profit shifting, will negatively affect all sorts of tax revenue sources over the medium term. COVID-19 tax relief measures to support business and households will also result in revenue foregone, because it means we're giving away some part of the revenue to support business and individuals. Therefore, it is necessary to monitor the social impact of the implementation of these measures to also make sure that the intended taxpayers and households are covered in this regard. The next slide. Government continues to provide tax incentives. Government continues to provide tax incentives to support economic recovery, support households, and support to boost investment in the economy. Of course, it's at the backdrop of government having announced over the years that there's a plan to review some of these tax incentives to ensure they are efficient, they ensure the efficacy and relevance in being more targeted. Of course, this is also the backdrop of the fact that there are studies that have shown that some of the tax incentives are not effective in supporting or ensuring more investments. Sometimes investors not necessarily take into account some of these incentives, but therefore requires the importance of making sure some of these measures are well targeted. Also take into account that the effect they have on the tax as a whole, it's quite longer than what they intended to do. It's therefore important to ensure that the necessary oversight and monitoring over these tax incentives, to also ensure that small and medium enterprises and informal businesses do access these incentives over the time. As we've seen, remember, there were a lot of public reports that during the lockdown that many informal businesses could not access some of these fiscal relief and that were provided by government in this regard. Next slide, sir. Of course, global COVID-19 economic lockdowns has accelerated digitalization of economic activities. And this has led to loss of government tax revenues, as the current tax framework measures are not geared up to generate maximum taxes from digital-driven business models. And the digitalization has also led to concentration of business activities of few players in particular markets. And that requires rethinking in taxing such sectors of fewer players dominating particular sectors. And this is a global phenomenon, global discussion about how to go about dealing with some of these concentration in markets or in certain players in markets. These developments have also accelerated discussions around reforming the tax systems to ensure fairer allocation of tax rights within the global economy. Failure to reach global consensus, like we've seen the much anticipated OECD interest framework, consensus that was much anticipated this year, has not realized earlier in this month, which means we'll continue to see many jurisdictions going unilateral approach, where they don't rely largely on the current mechanisms in place to impose taxes on digitized economy. We've also seen, I must add, that many prominent international renowned economists who are strongly recommending that countries should really rethink quite intensively in terms of how to about going to the unilateral approach in tax and digital economies, which really sparks more debate at as long as they think about how to deal with tax in the digital economy. And also seeing some of the information coming from the African tax aggression reform, which also raised concerns around African countries not already initiating their process of taxation around digital, taxing income around digitalized economies in the sector. Those are some of the issues that are around alternative fundraising additional revenues. Next slide. Oh, I think my last slide, I'll come and give later. Nelia can continue with the expenditure. Thank you.
Thank you to Ms. Dani. Members, now we get closer to the budget. And the next table, on the next slide. The table is just trying to show members the progress on a national level with the implementation of the current budget. So in terms of the bottom line, you can see during the first 5 months of the financial year, the national sphere actually has spent 40.3% of the revised estimate. Few of the slow spending departments on current expenditure was basic education. They were just on 16.7% on current expenditure. Military veterans are on 19.4%, and then another slow spending department is human settlements. They are only on 21.3% in terms of current expenditure. When you look at the transfers and subsidies, almost all departments have transferred in terms of schedules. And then in terms of capital assets, very slow spending has been seen in water and sanitation. They are only on 11.5% in terms of revenue expenditure. Next slide, please. So, at the beginning of the financial year, when the budget was tabled, the National Treasury indicated that there were provisions made that will only be allocated during the adjustments budget. So this table illustrates some of those provisional allocations, which includes the allocation to SAA for 6.5 billion. Then there's a provisional allocation for contingencies not assigned to votes. So they will now be allocated to votes, the 7 billion. And then you can also recall during the supplementary budget, there was 19.575 that was moved or shifted or shown as unspent and that has not been allocated yet, and that will be allocated now during the adjusted budget. And then provision was also made for ESCOM for 23 billion. And then the Treasury estimates that we will save 37.8 billion on compensation of employees, but that hasn't been allocated in terms of specific votes or departments. That will still be done during the adjusted budget. And there is still a contingency reserve for 5 billion that needs to be allocated during the adjusted process. So members, in that gray area at the bottom, I've also looked at the economic reconstruction and recovery plan, and In that plan, there was indication of spending requirements for the first 6 months of the implementation of that plan. I just also added that to this table. So we will just have to see whether these amounts will be appropriated during the adjusted budget. Public transport indicates that they will need 2.2 billion. Road rehabilitation, 713 million. Communication will need an additional 4.1 billion for the first 6 months. And then the president indicated that they will unlock 23 billion for sector investment. Next slide, please. So members, in terms of the new medium-term expenditure framework, the National Treasury normally issue guidelines. So I've actually compared last year's guidelines with this year's guidelines, and there are quite a bit of new interventions in the budget process for the 2021 medium term. So what was indicated in the guidelines on any additional revenue due to public institutions, they may not use that for increased expenditure. And they also indicated that they will provide special attention on public institutions to assess their progress and their budgets. And all departments need to provide, all the departments actually that transfer more than 50% of their budget, they will have to explain in terms of the functions performed by the department with the remainder of the budget and their role into the public institutions, such as oversight functions, shareholder compact, and direction setting through strategic plans. So that to me, we've actually been advocating for intervention like this for quite a while, because every year we indicated to the members of parliament huge amounts of transfers that national sphere actually made, and on a provincial level, but not as much. So this is actually very welcome in terms of this new intervention. In terms of public institutions that receive more than 20% of their funds from government, in this year's budget or the letter that is attached to the budget, draft budgets, the departments must indicate the rationale for the creation and the mandate. They must also indicate the implications of redrafting inception legislation. And the Treasury also wants to know the consideration that should be given to closing down some of these public institutions or transferring their functions back into the designated plant. So members, just in terms of the 50% that the National Treasury actually indicated that they need additional information on, I've done the exercise to basically identify those departments, and you can see agriculture is actually transferring 50% of their funds, basic education 83.5%, human settlements are transferring 97% of their budget, public works and infrastructure 86.7%, and social development is actually transferring 99.5% of their budget. So I think this will be a very useful exercise to get the information that was required from the Treasury in terms of what these departments actually spend the remainder of their budget after the transfer has been made. Thank you, members. You know, I think Ms. Carney will continue with the revenue slides.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Nadia. Honourable members, I think there's a few slides will provide an update of the provincial and local government performance against the budget. Next slide, Siraj. Provinces have an this slide shows that on average, on aggregate, provinces have spent about 36% of their budgets by end of August, which is about 5% or so lower than what the spending level was in the prior 2 years, and so which is around 41% or so. With slow spending experience under capital assets, which I think are below 27%, which partly slow spending in the capital assets could be linked to the lockdown, which makes it difficult for some of the expenditure to take place around capital expenditure. In this regard, and the faster spending the provincial on provincial levels in 5 months has been expensed under the interest and rent payments at around 63% of the budget amount. Next slide, Siraj. Provincial, having a closer look at the capital expenditure, this graph shows there that a closer look at capital expenditure per province in comparison with the prior years, we've seen that as expected due to COVID-19, 5 months. So five months. So provinces are spending slower than other forms of spending compared to the prior years there. And of course, this varies the province. This shows that the pattern varies the province there, with Northwest having spent slowest in the capital assets by I think 15% or so within 5 months, and KwaZulu-Natal being the province that has spent quite fast in compared to the average agreed amount. They spent I think almost 35% of the capital assets. Of course, this slow spend doesn't necessarily indicate underspending at the stage. However, continued slow spending throughout the year would lead to underspending in this regard. Next slide, Siraj. The next slide is about the local government. Unlike the province, the national sphere, local government's year end in its June, and therefore the last quarter of the financial year of the sphere experienced a hard lockdown, and this has affected municipalities' financial performance quite significantly compared to the national sphere and provincial sphere, which the hard lockdown was actually in the new financial year. Preliminary outcomes of the financial year results of CASCI and audited results shows that on aggregate, municipalities' revenue were hit hard in comparison with the previous financial year, with each collection of 88% compared to 92% or 100% in the prior years. Metros also done worse than aggregate performance of this, the sector, with collection of 84% of revenue compared to the prior years, which is quite a slight 10% higher than what they have done in the current in the year that just ended in June 2020. Next slide, the current slide, similar trend, of course, to that of revenues noted as well in expenditure, with an aggregate spending of 80%, which is almost 10% lower than how much was spent in the prior years, which I think spend more than 90% or so, and metros as well having spent better than the aggregate sector with 84%, still below the prior year spending. I suppose the point around these slides on the local provincial government, the main oversight question which could also be posed government is how has this financial performance affect the service delivery at both province and local government level, given the poverty and some of the socio-economic issues that are faced by many societies as well, areas and so on. The last slide on our members talks about the, in light of some discussions around the district models, we thought we should highlight some of the standing governance and financial management challenges experienced by the sector, the local government sector, and it's worth noting them and taking them on as part of the discussion through the thinking about the district models and how it impacts the different areas in this regard. The last, these factors, these issues were raised by the AGSA in their reports, so some of this long-standing, some of them are new issues, but largely there's a lot of governance issues and financial management issues faced in many municipalities, with, of course, poor municipalities or rural municipalities having more of these challenges than those with at the high end of the economy. The last slide, Chairperson, in conclusion, Chairperson and all members, we are saying the MTPS is presented in the middle of the COVID-19 pandemic with signs of the pandemic intensify in other parts of the world societies, and this brings huge uncertainties about global economic recovery. Government provided fiscal and other relief measures that had impact already in addressing some socioeconomic issues coming with the pandemic. However, the crisis found already pre-existing socioeconomic challenges requiring even more interventions in this regard. Government has announced recovery plans being implemented in different stages, despite measures to address fiscal risk. Deficit debt and finance costs continue to increase, as is shown in the graphs there. Therefore, economic recovery could be hampered by fiscal policy framework focusing on fiscal condition or overambitious debt reductions. Support struggling households, job creation initiatives should continue longer than planned. Government provides tax measures to support economic recovery. Therefore, the socio-economic impact of implementing these measures should be monitored, and particularly ensure that small business and informal business do benefit from these measures. Parliament will monitor the global debates about the need to reform international tax rules to ensure equity in allocation of tax and rights in the global economy. National Strategy as a custodian of PFMA shows commitment to ensure efficiency and effectiveness of policy implementation and budget. Support for oversight bodies and Parliament is greatly important. Chairperson, honourables, Hina, Hila, and Kos, thank you so much.
Are we done, colleagues? Colleagues from the Parliamentary Budget Office, are we done?
Yes,
we
are done.
Yes, we're done.
Okay. Thank you very much. This was the briefing from the Parliamentary Budget Office. I am going to invite the questions and comments. Honourable members, I do not see any hand. Alan, can you also please help me to identify members who want to speak?
I also don't see any hands either.
Yeah, there's no hands. There's nothing on the chat line either.
Are we content, honourable members, with the report or with the presentation rather? Honourable members? Honourable members?
This will be the shortest meeting.
Alan? Is there still nothing?
There's still nothing. It shows there's members in the meeting, participants, so maybe they can just indicate by saying that they don't have any question or comment.
Can we get an indication, colleagues, that we are content with the presentation and there are no comments or questions?
Honorable Tony, we are content. I am content.
Okay. Members? Okay, no questions from Honorable George. Honorable Shivambu? Are we content? Colleagues, I take it that we are indeed content with the presentation as it is. Let me take this opportunity to thank the Parliamentary Budget Office for their presentation. Let me also thank all of you colleagues who have participated in today's meeting. This meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.